Member Week is here at Lowe's. That means it's time for MyLowe's Rewards members to save big with up to 40% off hundreds of items like appliances, tools, home essentials, and more. Plus, get free standard shipping. Shop these exclusive member-only savings now through October 15th. Not a rewards member? Join for free today. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First for today. It is February the 3rd, 2023. Happy Friday to you. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. In the meanwhile, we'll have a great show for you leading into the weekend with a couple of stories, as the name of the show implies. And we are presented by our friends at French Lick Resort in French Lick, Indiana. Still plenty to talk about. We have one story that kind of relates to wrapping a bow around all kinds of things related to the PGA Tour schedule, elevated events, non-elevated events, some actions that we've seen from players and also sponsors alike to give us a sense of maybe where things are a handful of events into the year. And then on the back end of the show, second topic, we'll talk a little bit about some casual misogyny from Phil Mickelson, as well as just another bad tweet that he sent that I'm really not sure where he's going with things, and we'll come back to his approach to social media a little bit later. But first, let's talk about the PGA Tour schedule. We're basically a handful of events into the new year at this point. We've had an elevated event. We will have a bunch coming up in the next several weeks. And we've had some movement from players and sponsors, and really just kind of want to assess all of that together and see where we're at a handful of events in with this new experiment, because we've never had this before. We've never had such a obvious and official difference between tournaments on the schedule. Back in the day, there used to be the Tiger Tour, right? All the tournaments the Tiger played typically had great fields, great attendance, and great support, great viewership, because that was when the best golfer in the world, maybe the best golfer ever to play golf, was playing. And all the other events kind of paled in comparison. So if Tiger supported your tournament, you were in business. If not, you were, I won't say fighting for scraps, but you weren't getting the number one player in terms of popularity and capability. And that meant a big difference between your event and the events that got Tiger. But now we've got these elevated events. And so we've got, you know, what, 20, 25 guys that have committed to taking pit money in exchange. They're going to play in these designated events, 17 of them, plus three more to get to 20 to support the PGA Tour. We know the 17 events, and obviously you get basically the top players in all of those, and we're going to see the full field list Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern for the Waste Management Phoenix Open next week, but I can promise you it's incredible, and it's typically good, and it's going to be even better. And I think this is a little bit premature to talk about this topic, but I want to talk about it leading into next week and the following week, because then we've got Riviera after that, which is also an elevated event, is going to have a huge field. It's just going to be a tremendous couple of weeks. And we've got API and the players and the WGC match play. We've got a lot coming up, and we've talked about that on the show, but you have the stark comparison of what you're seeing this week at Pebble Beach, where you have seven of the top 50 in the world. And there's nothing wrong with having seven of the top 50 in the world, except that when you spread that talent otherwise out, you've got approximately the same number of top 50 players at the LIV/Asian Tour event, the Saudi International. And then you've got, you know, what, three or four top 50 players on the European Tour, the EP World Tour, competing in the UAE this week. And you've spread out things pretty well, but no one truly dominant event if you're looking at it against top 50 players. And so what has happened, seemingly, in things like this, weeks like this, where you've got three big tours competing together, you've diluted the product. You don't have big get-togethers in these weeks. You've got three different events that are very fractured in different time zones around the world, and it's really difficult to put all the eggs in the basket of any one of them, so it may be difficult to get interested in any single one of them. And that happens to fall on an event on the PGA Tour that's been around forever, has a great pedigree and history, that as recently as a decade ago featured Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson in the final group together on Sunday, a battle that Phil Mickelson won, by the way, and made it one of the hottest events of the year. And now that's just not the case. And that's not to slam the players competing. They're excellent golfers. They're professional golfers. And some of them are going to develop into names someday. But most of them at the top of the leaderboard are not really going to strike a chord with the public sporting consciousness. So you've got this really kind of first event that's glaringly weak because of the designated event schedule, because of the influence of LIV, to a degree because of the DP World Tour, but really because of LIV here this particular week. And what does that mean for this tournament moving forward? Do you, if you're AT&T or the Tour, go to the Pebble Beach Pro-Am or go to the AT&T folks? And by the way, Randall Stevenson, who's the head of AT&T, is on the PGA Tour's board, and you say, look, next year we're going to pump in the money to make this an elevated event or designated event, and you're going to have a $20 million purse, you're going to have an incredible field, don't worry about it, we got you, as kind of a make-good for the last several years of the Saudi International. I think that's the most likely strategy, and I don't think it's necessarily going to cost AT&T any extra sponsorship money, because if you've probably heard some of the rumors, if you haven't, I'm here to tell you, I don't think, and I'm pretty certain of this, I don't think all of the newly designated events have had their sponsors pony up that extra purse money. Some of that has come from the tour directly because they have increased money available through rights fees through their contracts with Golf Channel and NBC and CBS and ESPN. So they're taking some of that money and putting it to work through prize money, not only through the Player Impact program, which is now worth $100 million. So they're taking some of that extra money, giving it to the players, maybe a little bit sooner than they originally anticipated, but they're giving it to the players, and then giving the sponsors a bit of rub and credit by making them an elevated event. Well, they could do that next year for AT&T, for example, and they could do that for three other events on the schedule. And that could kind of be your make good for having several years of weak fields up against the Saudi International and losing some of your regulars. Dustin Johnson's one of those people that used to play this tournament with Wayne Gretzky, gave it a little bit of rub, gave it a little bit of pub. Phil Mickelson, same thing, used to play this tournament, used to be a really big thing for him to play this tournament. That's not the case now. So some of the biggest patrons of Pebble Beach are now LIV guys, and you need to be able to attract top players into this tournament. AT&T is a huge supporter of the PGA Tour, so you kind of have to do that. And I think if we're being realistic, in 2024 or 2025, this is going to be an elevated event, and it may turn out to be one in the long haul. I don't know. But the West Coast Swing is also so loaded right now because it seems like the player's strategy is to get out of the way the three events that get them to 20 that aren't elevated events, aren't designated events, and doing that as soon as possible. John Rahm has done it already. He did the CJ Cup, and then he did the Farmers Insurance Open and the Amex. Now he's done. He can play the rest of his schedule, and he doesn't have to worry about adding another tournament or finding another tournament elsewhere. He has some flexibility to add if he wishes, but he doesn't have to do any more. And I think other top players have seen the light on that and are like, hey, I could get that out of the way now and then give myself some freedom later. So the early season tournaments may take on added importance. And if you have your pick of the litter between playing at the American Express or playing in the Clam Bake or playing at Torrey Pines, you know, everyone's going to have their different opinion. But I think there's going to be a lot of favor to those tournaments in San Diego and the California desert compared to Monterey. And that's not because Pebble Beach isn't amazing. It's just because it's a little bit easier. The money is not exactly the same, but it's more or less the same. So I think what the PGA Tour has to do, again, is go and say to AT&T, we're going to elevate you. We're going to put you as a designated event. We're going to jack up the purse to $20 million. And you can have the opportunity to do this permanently or not, but, you know, we'll give you that ample opportunity to do so. And a great example of why they should do that is not only the LIV guys that are gone, but think about a guy like Davis Thompson, who almost won in the desert, gave a great challenge to John Rahm at the Amex, and he got into and realized he got into next week's Phoenix Open on the back of a sponsor exemption. Well, he withdrew right away from Pebble Beach because he didn't want to play five in a row, and he knew he had a crack at a $20 million tournament worth more than double the prize money this week, next week. So why is he going to play this week, too, if he wants to get the most out of himself? He wants to avoid playing five in a row because if you look at data on the PGA Tour, players who play more than 3 weeks in a row, their performance falls off precipitously once you get to week four, week five, and beyond. So he's going to break the cycle, take a week off, and then show back up at Phoenix, and hopefully he does well for himself, and maybe he finds a way into Genesis, which is another $20 million event, or into the API, another $20 million event. He's going to be in the Players, $25 million event. So you're creating this world where there's a stark contrast between getting into the designated events and playing an otherwise non-designated schedule or hoping that you get into them. And then you've got on the title sponsor side of things, you've got the World Golf Championships effectively going away as we know them after this year, because Golf Week reported that Austin Country Club is not going to host this event moving forward. The PGA Tour is picking up and moving out of town. And Dell is out as sponsor because Dell wanted to bring in Intel as a presenting sponsor, have dual sponsors. By the way, Intel's business is hurting severely right now, but they wanted to have them come in and be a presenting sponsor. And the tour said no, which means they're fine with killing off the match play as you understand it, as we've understood it for 25 years. And the WGCs are toast if that's the case, because the WGC in China is never coming back. No matter what anyone says, that there's still a contract out there. It's not coming back. Just not going to happen. So that's also a reality too, which means there's room for another designated event. Could that event be another rotating one? Could be five a year? Could it be one more permanent event? You've got the Houston Open, which Jim Crane, who owns the Houston Astros, has been a huge part of it. He's had a lot of influence and has tried to pressure the tour into bringing the Houston Open back from the fall into some part of the March part of the schedule in hopes that it could restore itself to kind of a pre-Masters lead-in like it was for years. It sounds like there's a good chance of that happening. But then there's also the CJ Cup, which has been played in the United States after its initial run in South Korea. And it seems like that's probably going to be the way this tournament goes moving forward as an American event. Well, they want out of the fall because they don't want to have to deal with fall series stuff or whatever that's going to look like. And we don't know what that is. So they could also want to seek a spot in the part of the schedule where the Stars are going to play from January through the end of August or early September. So there might be another opening there for another designated event that's willing to kind of put up the money or take the money from the tour if it's a subsidy to be able to be a designated event next year. So there's a clamoring among several events that want to be in that space. They want the top players. They want to guarantee the top players by being involved and putting on that purse. And then you've got tournaments that are happy to be in the fall. Sanderson Farms is a community-based tournament. It's been there for a half century. They're not worried about getting the best players in the world. They're going to have a great time regardless of who plays. So there's kind of stark contrast between the different types of tournaments on the PGA Tour, but we're starting to kind of see the machinations of all of that between how players choose their schedule, which sponsors choose to stay and go, which sponsors want to take their place and where on the schedule, and how all of that's going to work out. There's still a lot to be decided, but the early returns are this is just the beginning of some tumult in the schedule, and I think there's a lot to figure out about that. All right, second story today is Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson has kind of gotten back on social media in the last couple of weeks, sent a very nice tweet kind of out of nowhere about the Dubai Desert Classic last week. You know, oh, it's very exciting, enjoying watching it, and you should watch it on Golf Channel, you know, tomorrow for the final round. Like, what? Why are you sending a promotional tweet for the DP World Tour? That doesn't make any sense. They're not Saudi-backed. It's not live-related. I didn't really understand, but hey, he is also just a guy that watches golf. So he could be interested in that. But he was over in Saudi Arabia sending these tweets because he's getting ready, or was getting ready at the time, for the Saudi International, which is the first tournament of the year on the Asian Tour schedule. It is effectively the 15th live event, because everyone in LIV is going to play it, and some prospective LIV players, the guys that haven't even announced yet, are playing it. Think about Mito Pereira, Sebastian Munoz is out the door, and then there's going to be a full court press on Cameron Young, who's probably the one standout PGA Tour player that's most susceptible to potentially joining LIV. They're probably doing that this week as we speak. However, Phil just seemed to kind of get out there and start sending tweets that didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And one of those tweets was shared and then deleted not too long after, when he shared a tweet saying that the Saudis, and in particular the Saudis and Public Investment Fund, should be lauded for offering equal purses at the Saudi International this week on the Asian Tour and the Ladies Saudi International on the Ladies European Tour next week. They're both $5 million purses. The $5 million purse for the Saudi International is really just kind of the beginning. I mean, you get $1 million if you win, but a lot of the players in the 126-player field are paid very handsomely in appearance fees for showing up. So they're well ahead before they ever show up. And that's true. But that's not necessarily the case for the Lady Saudi International. The $5 million purse is a huge deal to the Ladies European Tour, where the average purse is often $300,000 or $400,000. So you're talking more than 10 times the average routine purse that's not a major on the Ladies European Tour. So of course it's a 70 player field, but for the 60 players that aren't among the exemptions, the invitees, the LPGA stars, so to speak, that's a huge amount of money. And it's very difficult to turn that down as an opportunity when you could win $1 million. At that point, maybe the money source doesn't really come into play in someone's thinking. And at the same time, because of the money disparity between the LPGA and the PGA Tour, it seems a lot more of a susceptible issue for the Saudis to kind of pick at because of their reputation with women's rights and how they treat women, how they treat anybody really, but also because the pay disparity between men and women as professional golfers is still stark, still by a factor of 5 or 6 between the LPGA and the PGA Tour. And that's not gotten really any better because of all the money that has come into the game, even on the LPGA side of things. That multiplier is what it is. It still is what it is. But for top LPGA players, a $5 million purse is also still a lot of money. So they could get paid an appearance fee and they can go play this tournament. They could do incredibly well. That's why they've attracted a really good field for this tournament. So Phil tweeted about it saying, well, there's a lot of talk in golf about equal prize money and the Saudis are doing something about it by having equal purses between the Asian Tour event and the Ladies European Tour event. And of course he got ripped savagely by people left and right because that doesn't kind of pass muster in terms of the Saudis being lauded as for equal rights and liberators, so to speak. And he ultimately deleted the tweet, even though he's still factually correct. I mean, he's not wrong. The purses are equal. The appearance money might not be, but the purses are equal. And so I'm very curious why he kind of backed off of that and why he pulled that tweet out of space, other than the blowback. But he doesn't seem worried about blowback. And that leads into the second tweet that he sent that was awfully dumb. And you can even put that this seems dumber than the first, in my opinion. But he was speaking with former NFL player Danny Woodhead, who had shared a tweet basically about commenting about the desire to have kind of a LIV versus PGA Tour match. And Phil Mickelson responds, oh, it sounds great, but we would dominate them so soundly and it would be over so quick that TV would have to fill an hour of dead time. That's why it's not happening at this time. Shrug. First of all, it's never happening. That's never, ever happening. Second of all, people started to rip off smart replies to him because everything LIV generates a response. And everything, particularly Phil or Reed or Poulter, that also generates a response. And so this person's account, Shark Winger David Clark, responded with a smart alecky response. Do you still play golf, Phil? Which, I mean, hey, I realize if you get like hundreds of tweets at you with snarky things, you're going to fire back mean stuff. I'm on the receiving end of that sometimes, maybe not to the volume of Phil Mickelson, but it doesn't feel good and it's not fun and you really have to resist the urge to fire back. But if you do fire back, you have to be careful what you say because then you just kind of potentially step into more deep water that eventually gets over your head and it's really hard to extricate yourself from it. So Phil responds to this account, Shark Winger, David Clark, by saying, ma'am, we are speaking guy talk. This isn't directed towards you. Now, I'm pretty sure David is a guy, so I think he's trying to be kind of almost like a, oh, sir, this is a Wendy's kind of meme response to the tweet, but then it's just very casual sexism involved in there, and you could see the replies of, oh, wow, some casual misogyny from Phil. Color me surprised. Tweeting at Eamon Lynch because he gets tagged on everything LIV. He is embracing Saudi culture. Someone else, making fun of women now, are we, Phil? Seems like the Saudis are rubbing off on you. And it's one of those things where you're like, what? How did you arrive at, you know, when you're typing this out on your phone or whatever, and you're, God forbid, your computer, and then you hit send, and you're like, that's a good one. And you didn't, he didn't even delete that one. That one's still out there. I can read it right now. It's what I'm reading to you. It's not a screenshot. So I'm kind of concerned about Phil's mindset. I mean, I am anyway, but he was saying in leading into the tournament, he's back to his high school weight, and he, you know, looks fine. I mean, for a guy, what, 52, 53 years old, he looks like he's in good shape, but at the same time kind of looks emaciated. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he's in the best state of mind. And then you go and play the Saudi international, the results aren't good, and you start to kind of get all of this analysis where you're like, all right, Phil, like, come on, man, you can't, you're just damaging your reputation every single day, and it's not good, because someday, I assume Liv is not going to be forever, and someday, even if it is forever, Liv's not going to be with Phil Mickelson forever. He's going to eventually stop playing whenever this contract ends. He's just going to be done with golf, and you're going to have to walk away from that and then resume just being Phil Mickelson, an incredible golfer, Hall of Famer, what, 6-time major winner. And then you go and say, well, but those last few years, what the heck were you doing? And will that lead to some kind of mea culpa tour? Will he just go away? Will he try to refurbish himself and try to position himself as a guy who just kind of went through a dark period? I don't know. But it feels like we're getting more and more clues that Phil's just not in the best place. And I'm sure Liv fixed some things with some money, but I don't think it fixed everything. And as someone who really enjoyed watching Phil Mickelson play golf for a really long time, that's pretty disappointing. I know Phil is a little bit different in public than he is in private. And maybe some of that difference is starting to kind of come out. The private Phil is starting to become a little bit more of the public Phil. But even still, for a lot of people who've never seen that and experienced it, it's kind of a bummer. And I don't know. I don't know how you fix it, but it is a kind of disappointing to see. That's going to do it for us today on Two Off the First. Thank you so much for watching or listening to the show. If you catch us on a podcast platform, please give us a nice review. Leave some comments. That'll help us reach more people. If you're watching us on YouTube, smash that like and subscribe. We appreciate that too. And if you're catching us anywhere else, thanks so much for spending some of your day with us. We'll be back on Monday with another episode of Two Off the First. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the golf, and we will see you on Monday.